This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, as always, and I'm here with Susan. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
It's just been you and me for a while now, huh?
Yeah, one benefit of a mass pandemic is, you know, makes it easier to schedule podcast recording.
That's right. None of us are traveling. All right, so let's start like we have been doing since this this whole thing began. Start with the current numbers on COVID-19. And of course, they're not getting any better. Right now, and by the way, I have stopped checking the CDC site because it's never up to date. This is crazy to me that CDC only updates their site once a day.
And they're always behind. Even then, they're behind. Their numbers are always lower than everyone else's numbers.
Right. That's deliberate. That's deliberate. There's no reason. So John Hopkins has a fantastic COVID tracking tool. Just Google it. And they have like global cases on there. And it's live. So right now in the United States, we've got about 610,000 folks tested positive. A little over 3.1 million people have actually been tested. 26,119 deaths attributed to COVID. And depending on who you ask, that's either too high or too low.
It's too low,
yeah. But at this point, we have crossed another threshold globally, which is that 2 million people worldwide have been tested positive for COVID-19, and we're at about 128,000 deaths worldwide.
Now, you said that the numbers aren't getting any better, and that is true in the sense that they're not going any lower, and they won't.
We've got some flattening, right? We've got some flattening.
There is definitely a sign that, I mean, we're not on the, you know, hold on to your seat because this is going up like a rocket ship level. We are definitely leveling off. And by that, I mean, we're still like massively increasing our numbers every day, but they're not, the rate of increase is not increasing like it was.
But I guess it depends on what you're talking about, where you're talking about, right? Like, it's different in California, it's different in New York, it's different. Like, I read yesterday that for folks in the DMV, which is where we are, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, we should expect the rate to rise over the next 3 weeks and then see the flattening off. I don't know.
It is obviously different state by state and region by region. But as a whole, there is a leveling. And even individually, we're not seeing anyone else on New York's path, which is the situation we most want to avoid. And California is a great example of what happens when you, I mean, get a little bit lucky and also do things right. By all rights, California should have been the epicenter. They had lots of travel to China. They have dense population. They have a lot of people. They have all these things going against them. And yet they've barely had a, it's a very big blip, but comparatively, they barely had a blip.
Right.
And there's no sign right now of it reaching the levels, you know, of New York. And meanwhile, of course, New York is on like, it's now leveling off there too. Their shutdowns have been effective finally. And, you know, the deaths are still rising, but the actual hospitalizations are down. But yeah, like, it kind of shows.
What we are seeing now, I realize, is that we're going to be seeing the kind of the growth in closed populations, like prison populations, nursing homes, senior center, things like that, where it seems like every day you're getting, it just seems like it's growing inside there.
The world's greatest rate of positive results is Rikers Prison, Rikers Jail in
Rikers,
New York.
Rikers. Now, New York Times reported, I think it was Monday, and I feel like this is something, I don't know if this is, Trump was acting out a couple days ago and kept talking about New York Times report. I think this is the one he's talking about. And in this report, it says that epidemiologists right now, as they're looking at the numbers, are saying, you know, we've had about 26,000 deaths, a little over 26,000 deaths reported, confirmed, but they're saying that 90% of them could have been preventable if social distancing had been put in place only 2 weeks earlier than it was, and 60% preventable if it was put in place 1 week. I mean, that's how effective social distancing is. But also, it points to the fact that it just wasn't done, even though Trump had so much time to do this.
Yeah, it just shows. So when the shutdown started, not everywhere around the country, most places around the country, even at that point, numbers were very low compared to where you're now. And a lot of people thought it was too soon. Like, hey, most places don't have an outbreak. Most places are okay. And even New York looks, you know, a little bit iffy, but not too bad. And that's when the shutdowns happened. And that was already too late. It's just a reminder that the shutdowns have to happen before there are visible signs in everyday life that they're needed.
Another thing that has become a regular part of our daily life now are the briefings, which continue.
It's like Groundhog Day. I swear to God.
I really feel like that. I feel like every day I'm getting up, it's like the same day. I was talking about this with my daughter. It feels like, in some ways, the same day over and over. The days seem really long and draggy because it seems like the same day. But at the same time, the weeks are going by fast. I'm like, wait a minute. It's like...
It's April. You know already. What
I mean? I like, it's mid-April, right? It's like, it's mid-April. So it's just weird. I guess time has no meaning. I tweeted out the other day that I cut a cake from the middle of the cake. I cut a whole piece out of the flipping middle because I was like, why am I following these rules at this
Rules
point?
Don't matter. Nothing rules matter. Are an artifact of our old lives.
It was great. You know, I have been living really just very limited, I realize. So I'm going to branch out more like that. All right. So let's talk about the briefings. Still insane.
Yeah, they are. I mean, for the most part, like, I hate to say like, oh, he's really insane today, because you know what? He's been really insane periodically on a regular basis for the past 3.5 years.
Trump makes you hold his beer every single day.
Yeah. But he's definitely, I'd say that it's not unfair to say that there's been a slightly higher density of truly crazy days lately. But again, like, it's not even like it's that different from other days. It's like, it's just a little bit more grouchy and stompy than average, but not qualitatively
didn't he
different.
Threatened yesterday at the briefing yesterday, told a journalist, if you don't stop talking, I'm leaving.
And he's like, then you'll have to, I think it was the guy from Playboy, but Trump was like, you'll have to deal with all these guys. If the reporters around him will like punish him or get mad at him for making Trump leave, for asking questions. Like, I wish he'd actually kept asking questions, but at the same time, they control the mics and they've now started cutting people off, so he actually couldn't.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with Monday. We can just skip like last week because this week's got so much insanity going on. Yeah, it is.
I don't remember last week. That was so
last week didn't happen. It was just another blurring, groundhoggy existence. But Monday, 2 days ago, Trump starts off by tweeting out, "For the purpose of creating conflict and confusion, some in the fake news media are saying that it is the governor's decision to open the states, not that of the president of the United States and federal government. Let it be fully understood that this is incorrect. It is the decision of the president, and for many good reasons." Yeah. So Trump is like, he's done with this. He's over shutdowns. He wants to reopen the country and go back to the thing he calls the greatest economy in the history of the world. As if that's possible.
I mean, look, Easter came and went. Like, there was no great resurrection. By the way, how was your Easter? How was it? Cool. Good.
Like every other day.
Okay. Easter came and went, and so he didn't get his way. But Monday morning, he was chomping at the reins, yeah.
And Trump's strategy has been primarily based on trying to find others to blame. He has made it like the state's responsibility to respond to the pandemic, with the federal government there only to fill in gaps here and there. That way, if there's a bad response, he can blame the states and say, oh, it was never his job in the first place. It is absolutely his job. Like, wars and pandemics are the things that we need federal government for. That's why there's a federal government. That being said, he's now kind of ping-ponging back and forth between his, like, instinctive desire to avoid blame, but also his...
But also say he has all the power.
Yes, but also so his instinct to say, like, oh, yeah, I got the power to do that. Yeah, so he has this, like, warring impulse that he wants to blame the governors, but, like, at the end of the day, it's my power, all my power. So he kind of tries to hedge it sometimes and says, you know, I could do this, but I'm going to choose to let the states do what they want. This week, nah, he is so eager to go back to work that this is all he can think about, is how much power he has and how he has the power to do everything.
Doesn't cover it the way it should be. Go ahead. One more question, Steve. Go ahead.
There's a debate over what authority you have to order the country reopened. What authority do you
have? Well, I have the ultimate authority, but we're going to get into that in a minute. We're going to just finish this up. We're going to tell you about other things that we've done right.
I mean, these are just disturbing words to hear the president say. I mean, were you watching yesterday, Rabia?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, even amid all the craziness, I'm usually unfazed by it after all this time, but like, that was really unsettling to hear.
I mean, he referred to the Constitution a couple of times. He just throws words out there here and there. And it was, but you know, he went on this entire rant. I don't think a single journalist actually pushed him on this specific point and said, can you tell us where in the Constitution you have this? What about federalism? What about the power of this? Like, I think everybody was in shock, maybe, but
they
nobody
tried.
Was prepared.
They tried. The problem is that with Trump and these briefings, they're pointless and have no value in terms of conveying information. So right now, I am drinking the most delicious water I have ever had. Ooh. For real, because it's...
That's... Wow.
It is clearly filtered, and it is a new way to think about water filtration.
Oh, I got my clearly filtered jug as well, and the water bottle, the individual water bottle last week. I love it.
Yes, they're the tastiest water, and also it's good for you, because while most water filters only focus on making your water taste better, Clearly Filtered does that and makes your water healthier by removing hundreds of toxins and also keeps the beneficial minerals in your water.
Now, I know there's been like a run on water bottles in stores recently. I was just at the grocery store earlier this week, and there's like signs saying you can't have more than like 2 cases of bottled water, but you don't need that with Clearly Filtered because it just, I mean, their filter is so amazing. It captures and destroys over 230 chemicals, contaminants, and toxins that are commonly found in tap water. And by the way, Susan, when I read that and I saw the little list of all the different contaminants and chemicals that it filters, I was like, wait a minute, you're telling me all that stuff is in my tap water?
Yeah, why didn't no one tell us about this?
I know.
No other water pitcher filter removes more contaminants and at a higher rate than Clearly Filtered. The most common carbon filter water pitcher, one that starts with a B, only removes 5 contaminants for comparison.
Oh my lord. Well, also another reason that I love Clearly Filtered, it is made in the USA. All their filters are made in the USA, so we're supporting our economy, supporting our workers. Since we've gotten it, my family, we're all drinking from that water jug every single day. We fill it up 2-3 times a day and drink from it. It's been great.
If you think it's time to get a real water filter, one that actually removes the hundreds of contaminants in tap water, then visit clearlyfiltered.com/45th and use coupon code 45th to get 20% off your new filtered water system. They ship throughout the U.S. for free, and you have a 30-day risk-free guarantee and then a lifetime warranty on all their filter systems. clearlyfiltered.com/45th. That's clearlyfiltered.com/45th.
Oh my God. Susan,
what?
Did you see the slideshow?
Which one?
Did you see this? You didn't see the
slideshow? I've seen a lot of slideshows. You gotta narrow
it down. No. The slideshow that he showed on Monday's briefing.
Oh, the campaign ad.
The campaign ad. I guess it looked like a slideshow to me. Oh my God.
Yeah.
We gotta talk about that too.
I mean,
let's talk about that.
My first instinct was like it's a Hatch Act violation, but I guess they never actually explicitly made it campaign material, so it's not. I mean, it's just, these things are propaganda in every sense of the word. I'm not using that to be dramatic. It is pure propaganda in, like, the core sense of that word. There's nothing conveyed information. There's only the attempt to persuade and bully and lie and put out false narratives in order to bolster Trump's government.
That's he made everybody sit there and watch this video that, first of all, it looked like a sixth grader put it together. He's trying to do two things. Number one, he's trying to say, I took action really, really fast, but also nobody really knew, like at the same time. And so that's what this video was showing. It was like clips of him giving statements to kind of like back up. I mean, it was so embarrassing. And I can't believe they put that together. And in between the clips, they had like really terrible, like really terrible font, like these, this little captions in the middle. It was just obscene. It was awful.
They didn't put most of it together. Most of it was a video of what aired on Fox News showing clips from other news stations of like people in February and January saying like, you know, this is not going to be like talking about the risk of COVID. And the thing is, all of that happened because of Trump. All that happened because the government was not responding. And without any kind of sign that it was a problem, of course no one's going to act like there's a problem. Like all indications were from the government that they had, who has the intelligence, who has information, who has the data, that this was not going to be this situation. So people responded accordingly. That goes back to Trump. That is his responsibility to inform the nation.
There is a weird chicken and egg effect here with Trump and Fox, especially because there are times when Trump, like throughout in the last couple of months, when he makes some kind of decision to help mitigate the spread, and then you have Hannity or somebody else get on Fox and undermine it and challenge it, basically. And Laura Ingraham has done the same thing, too. And then I feel like that feeds back into him, like, kind of second-guessing himself. Like, should I be doing this? Should I not be doing this? Like, so sometimes it goes one way, sometimes it goes the other. He's absolutely influenced and impacted by these idiots on Fox News.
Because they're the actual White House. Fox News is the actual officials he's working with.
That's our administration.
Yeah, that's where it's really located. And he's being influenced by his officials. Ingraham was the one who was, like, promoting the May 1st open date for, like, a couple weeks now. Like, she got her way.
Yeah.
But yes, Trump has doubled down on this idea that, okay, but that's the thing. He's now committed to opening the nation, quote unquote, on May 1st. But that isn't Trump's power to do. Like, Trump didn't even do the shutdown. He issued guidelines, but after states had already started shutting themselves down. So the thing is, Trump wants it to happen, but he can't do it. But he's trying to claim he can.
Just to clarify your understanding of your authority vis-a-vis governors, just to be very specific. For instance, if a governor issued a stay-at-home
order... When you say my authority, the president's authority.
Not mine, because it's not me. This is when somebody's the president of the United States, the authority is total. And that's the way it's got to be.
Your authority is total.
It's total. It's total. And the governors know that.
So if a
the governors know that. Now, you have a couple of bands of excuse me. You have a couple...
Could you rescind that order?
You have a couple of bands of Democrat governors, but they will agree to it. They will agree to it. But the authority of the president of the United States having to do with the subject we're talking about is total.
They're going to cooperate and decide when to reopen.
Well, they can decide, but...
undermine what you're trying to do?
No, not at all. Let me just tell you, very simple. I'm going to put it very simply. The president of the United States has the authority to do what the president... has the authority to do, which is very powerful. The president of the United States calls the shots. If we weren't here for the states, you would have had a problem in this country like you've never seen before. We were here to back them.
So yesterday he seemed to be hedging a little bit. He was going back and forth. He said, okay, no, well, you know, the governor is ultimately going to be making the decisions, but they're going to be doing it. But he also said if he were to order, if a governor decided to open up and he, but the feds decided to shut it down, they could override that and vice versa, that he would be giving guidelines at the end of the day. Like, he just doesn't know which way he wants it.
And I think someone got it, finally convinced him that his ability to actually do this is sort of limited. So he doesn't want to make it obvious he doesn't have the power to do so. He's trying to claim that he has the power, but he's choosing not to use it. So therefore, you can't challenge him on his existence.
Oh, I'm dying.
Okay. Yeah. So now reporters did try and question him on this. They did... try and get him to explain what he meant, what this comes from, like where he came from. But the reason it didn't happen, no one, is because Trump doesn't give answers. He has two responses. Like, usually he just like says noises and words and different strings. And most questions are really bad that he gets. Most questions are not tailored for the situation. They're just generally open-ended, like, what are your thoughts on XYZ? Or like, I heard about X, do you think Y? Or like, whatever, bullshit stuff. And to those questions, Trump always just like gives rambling words on how great he is, how amazing he is. Like, no one's ever heard about this, how great this was. No one could have expected how amazing it is. I had the best economy in the world, and I had to shut it all down. That word salad. When someone does try and give him, does give a question that's well-designed, and by that I mean like a typical like cross-examination question, where he can't do that, he doesn't answer. He just does not answer. And here's what happened when they tried to question him on where the source of his total authority is.
You said when someone is president of the United States, their authority is total. That is not true. Who
told you know what we're going to do? We're going to write up papers on this. It's not going to be necessary because the governors need us one way or the other, because ultimately it comes with the federal government. That being said, we're getting along very well with the governors. And I feel very certain that there won't be a problem. Yeah, please,
governor,
go ahead.
Has any governor agreed that you have the authority to decide when their state...
I haven't asked anybody. Because I don't, you know why? Because I don't have to. Go ahead, please.
But who told you the president has the total authority?
Enough. Please.
You mentioned the vice president.
Yeah. Now, he's done this before, that thing where he says, like, enough, and then cuts the reporter off. But this has definitely increased a lot in recent days. He has upped his use of this technique.
He's just shutting reporters down, basically, and he insults them, and then he moves on.
He won't let them finish questions, even. And it's really disturbing that, I mean, it's just so plainly an authoritarian move. It's so at odds with the idea of a Democratic president. And yet everyone just expects it, because that's who Trump is. Like, of course Trump isn't going to answer a question. Of course Trump doesn't feel bound to, you know, give a response to the public. So,
I mean, Trump always has the option of actually letting his actual task force hold these briefings whenever needed. And not be there.
No, he doesn't, because the point of them is to give him an ego boost. So, also, he's probably as bored as the rest of us. Like, this is his only chance to get out and yell at people.
There was a report that early in March, I don't know if it was before the briefings or when the briefings first began or something around that time, his idea actually was to start a daily two-hour-long White House radio show. And he ran it past whoever is left there. And he said apparently he wanted it to be completely unfiltered, unchecked. He just wanted an open phone line for people to call and ask him questions and talk to him, and he would respond, and that would be a daily to it. Can you imagine this, Susan?
He wants to be Rush Limbaugh, like with power, but Rush Limbaugh. Well, that's his actual day-to-day job he wants.
What he actually said in that, as he proposes, he said, the only reason I'm not going to do this because it would compete with Rush Limbaugh. So, and apparently the folks who were in the room were like, they just didn't know what to do with that. They just kind of, he just kind of then wandered back out of the room and Jesus, just let it go.
I guess you just let him like reach that conclusion. You're like, okay, dodge the bullet there. Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, the briefings are so pointless, but it's, I mean, the reporters aren't going to walk away, but they should, because there's nothing in them that counts as information. So one reporter, though, perhaps realizing the inherent pointlessness of trying to get Trump to answer in a way that has meaning, decided to not ask Trump, but to ask Pence about Trump's claims to total authority.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, here's how it went.
Mr. President, actually, this is a question for Mr. Vice President. Do you agree with the president's statement and his understanding of federalism that his power is total, right, in the way that he described it? Is there anything you'd like to add or any context you'd like to add to what he, the way he was discussing that?
I support the president's leadership under the National Emergency Declaration that he signed. We're standing before you today, the first time in American history, when all 50 states have issued emergency declarations and the territories. This is an unprecedented time in the life of the nation. And fortunately, as presidents reflected and our health experts will continue to reflect, because the American people have heeded the president's coronavirus guidelines for America, because state governors have taken those and implemented them, even in states where there was not a significant outbreak, and implemented additional measures as we provided them with data about cases and best practices. We're making real progress as a country.
But it sounds like you think his power is a little bit more circumscribed than total.
Well, make no mistake about it. In the long history of this country, the authority of the President of the United States during national emergencies is unquestionably plenary. And you can look back through times of war and other national emergencies. And as the President said, we'll happily brief that. But in the days ahead, what the President has charged us to do is to work with our health experts.
Yeah, so he used the bigger, fancier word than Trump, but Pence is down with this. He agrees. The President has plenary authority to do what he wants in this situation of a pandemic. Yep. And you know, if Republicans were concerned about it, I didn't hear about it. Like, I looked for it. I saw no one who was speaking out about this, like, insane, horrifying grab. There are a couple of, like, conservative commentators who are like, reporters are making the mistake of taking Trump literally and not seriously again. Like, fah.
What, how do you not take that literally? Well, here's the thing, though. He can say what he wants. At the end of the day, what's happening is governors are making their own moves. This is, I think, fascinating. What's happened is the emergence of these two, like, coalitions on the East and West Coast. Can we talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, the Hunger Games is beginning. Have you read
that book? You're seeing it.
Have you read those books, Rabia?
No, I have never actually read the Hunger Games.
I haven't seen the movies. But basically in that book, we have the United States is now, you know, 13 districts, which are basically states like lumped together in little clusters. And, well, we now have District 3 forming on the left coast. And we have over here on the east, we got the New England Chowda district starting. I don't know. It's good.
The
that,
Western
you know,
Pact. And
yeah. The states are figuring out a bypass solution for this lack of federal authority. But and it's not bad inherently, but it is concerning and disturbing as a more general matter. Mm.
Well, on the East Coast, you've got New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Rhode Island, Massachusetts. They are starting up their own regional working group. On the West Coast, you've got California, Washington, Oregon, and they're going to be starting their own. So this is like they can't rely on the feds for, and we talked about this last week, for actually getting supplies and equipment. California already declared itself a nation state, and this is the next step into, I mean, like, I just don't see how this is going to... At the same time, you have the states like Florida and Louisiana, they're going to be, you know, rebels till the end and holdouts till the end. But I think as states are moving towards more and more independence, I mean, because they don't have a choice,
So yeah, Trump is just a broken record. These briefings are pointless. But his only response these days, and like in that bizarro campaign propaganda video, he was talking about all the bold and, you know, effective stuff he did to stop the pandemic. But here's the thing, that timeline of his, it ends in January. It doesn't continue on because he did nothing in February. His only claim that he can make is that to say that he saved hundreds of thousands of lives by shutting down travel from China. And then starts complaining about how all the Democrats like called him racist for doing it and said he shouldn't have done that. Okay, one, he did not shut down travel from China. He had a restriction on travelers who were Chinese origin, but it did not stop Americans flying back from China. Americans, even after his ban went into place, flew back from like Wuhan. And second, his claims of being attacked for this ban are as fabricated as everything else he says. I mean,
all right, he said he was called a racist and a xenophobe for it.
Yeah, and like these restrictions, I mean, they came too late and were too limited in scope, but they weren't bad. They were good policy for what they were. But that's just all he has to rely on, and it was ultimately meaningless because he probably did delay the virus's spread in some locations, not New York, but in California. But delaying only helps if you use that delay to do something else, which he did not. And a reporter tried to get him to address that. It went about like you'd expect.
I saved tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of lives by
time that you bought. The argument is that you bought yourself some time. You didn't use it to prepare hospitals. You didn't use it to ramp up testing.
Right, you're so, now, you're nearly so, 20 million you're so disgraceful. It's so disgraceful the way you say that. Let me just listen. I just went over it. I just went over it.
In an unprecedented crisis.
Nobody thought we should do it. And when I did it.
But what did you do with the time that you bought?
You know
the
we
month
did.
Of February. That,
you
that
know
video
we did.
Gap.
What do you do?
Month of February.
What do you do when you have no case in the whole United States?
You
reported it. Zero cases, zero deaths on January 17th.
January. The video has a complete gap.
On January 30th.
What did your administration do in February with the time that your travel ban botched?
A lot. And in fact, we'll give you a list. What we did, in fact, part of it was up there. We did a lot. Look. You know you're a fake. You know that your whole network, the way you cover it, is fake. And most of you, and not all of you, but the people are wise to you. That's why you have a lower approval rating than you've ever had before, times probably three.
Wow. I got to give it up for her.
She did good.
It was one of the rare moments in which he's really been challenged, and it's been pointed out, but God, she got him crazy. But basically that's the whole point, is that he spent, 4 to 6 weeks doing absolutely nothing. She's like, you bought some time and did what with it?
Nothing. He did a lot. And then if you, like, you try to question him again, he starts attacking the reporter. Like, oh, that's all he's got. But he's gotten even crazier, because this has been going on for a while. This claim about like, oh, I saved the world by doing this ban when he did jack all with it. At the briefing on like Monday or Tuesday, whatever day it was, he did the usual rant about how Democrats, you know, attacked him for it and how Joe Biden called him racist for it, like this.
Now, we're supposed to close down the country, but here's what happened. When on January 31st, I instituted the ban, Joe Biden went crazy. He said, you don't need the ban. He didn't go crazy. Like, he didn't even know what the hell the ban was. But he didn't go crazy. But he did say, he did call me xenophobic. Wait a minute. He called me xenophobic. He called me a racist.
All right, side note, quick. It is really funny to me how, like, in the middle of this clip, Trump, like, starts fabricating one story, decides mid-sentence that he has a better fabricated story he wants to go with instead, and he just switches to it totally. Like, he's like, oh, Biden went crazy about what I did. Oh, no, he didn't go crazy because he didn't even know about it. He was too out of it to even know that this had happened, so he wasn't driven crazy. But this thing he didn't know about, he called me racist for doing.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And again, what Trump is saying is not true. But there is a grain of truth to it. He's got a little bit of a hinge or a, you know, toehold into reality. Because when Trump announced these restrictions, Biden was at a campaign event in Iowa. And he said that, quote, Americans need to have a president who they can trust what he says about it, that he's going to act rationally about it. And that this is not a time for Donald Trump's record of hysterical xenophobia and fear-mongering to lead the way instead of science. Biden did not call this ban hysterical xenophobia, But he was referring to Trump's like record. And again, like, is Trump doing
generally.
This? Yeah. And that's a fair question, because Trump's trying to do all kinds of crazy shit at the borders. Like,
he called it the Wuhan flu and the Chinese virus forever. Are you kidding me? Of course.
Yeah. And he was trying to like use this as an excuse to like make the borders with Mexico even stronger, as if Mexico didn't have far less infection than we did. All right, now that's kind of the old crazy. Here is the new crazy he has doubled down on.
He has since apologized, and he said, I did the right thing. So when you say, why didn't you this? Every Democrat thought I made a mistake when I did it. I saved tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of lives. When you ask me that question, why did Biden apologize? Why did he write a letter of apology? No, that's very important. Why did the Democrats think that I acted too quickly? You know why? Because they really thought that I acted too quickly. We have done a great job. Now, I could have kept it open.
Yeah. Trump is now claiming that not only did Biden call him a racist and a xenophobe, that Biden apologized for doing so. And in fact, Biden wrote a letter of apology to Trump for doing so. Like, it's not insane. Just like, oh, we had a phone call and he said a sorry, which, you know, okay, who can prove that one way or another? It was a conversation, you know? So like,
what do you think is happening, Susan? Do you think he's actually losing his grip on reality?
No.
Do you think he knows, I can make up whatever I want. Nobody can do anything about it. I mean, there's no fact checking. I think there's just nothing. It's not going to hurt me in any way to make up a complete and utter lie. Does he know it's a lie?
Yeah, he knows. He knows it's a lie. It's Trump Unbound. He is totally, I mean, all right. To say he knows it's a lie implies that, like, he'd be concerned that it's a lie. That's not even where he's at. Like, he is indifferent to the truth of it. It's not that he's trying to lie. It's that he has a story he wants to convey, and he does not give a shit about any sort of connection to reality that I have. If it's true, cool. If it's not, cool. That's where he's at. And he now has learned that there is no consequence.
Has the Biden camp released a statement saying there has been no letter of apology?
Yes, they did. They clarified that no, in fact, there was not a verbal and there was not a written apology and that none of this happened. Like, Biden did not apologize for the thing he did not do.
But yeah, as you say, he is becoming more and more, it seems, unhinged with all this. I mean, like, you know, between unemployment numbers, the economy shutting down, I don't know what's happening with the market. I haven't been following that since the last time it crashed. But, you know, and the deaths and everything, it seems like it's getting crazy. So yesterday, you know, we mentioned earlier about these new, the new districts that are forming. I'm going to die in the Hunger Games, Susan. You're going to have to save me.
I volunteer's tribute.
What district? We're going to be in Trump's district.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. We will be. We're screwed.
We will be. So yesterday, Trump tweeted out, I think, one of the craziest tweets he's tweeted. But I don't know. It's just between Monday and Tuesday. Like, it's just Monday and Tuesday. These 2 days, he tweeted about his ultimate authority. And the next day, he tweets, this is what he says. Tell the Democrat governors that, quote, Mutiny on the Bounty is one of my all-time favorite movies. A good old-fashioned mutiny every now and then is an exciting and invigorating thing to watch, especially when the mutineers need so much from the captain. Too easy. All right.
Oh, my God. Can I point out, first of all, that no one asked him about this at any briefing? They're like, that insanity, we're just not even going to touch it. Like, it's not a bad decision because you're not going to get any kind of useful answer out of it, but it's like, that's where we're at. This thing is fucking heaping batshit. And, like, I spent way too long thinking about it. But asking him's not going to help.
About this tweet?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what's your take? What does this mean to you, Rabia?
Well, okay. A couple of things. Number one, I want to talk about the form of the tweet. Then we'll talk about the substance. There's no way Trump cannot tweet in complete sentences with like a punctuation. I don't think he tweeted this.
He did. He absolutely did. No one else is this stupid.
You think so? I mean, I can see somebody else drafting the tweet for him if this was like his general kind of sentiment, and then that there's a sentiment. So right now, I mean, okay, look, I don't know the movie. I have not seen Mutiny on the Bounty. I know the phrase. I know the general, like, you know, what it's about. But the way he's looking at the governors who are basically taking responsibility for their states, which is exactly what they're supposed to do. That's what they were elected. That's their job. I mean, what happens in a mutiny? You know, that's treason. Mutiny is treason.
So Trump is thinking about, I think he is tweeting about this the same way you are. Someone who has no fucking clue what happens in the movie. That's the only conclusion I can reach. Because in Mutiny and the Bounty, the movie version, not the real life version, Captain Bly, the captain, there's a mutiny. He's put in a ship and he has to row his way, his ass back to England. And when he gets back home eventually, there's a, you know, a hearing, and England concludes that, you know, we're not going to punish him for being what he did as captain, being a gross and cruel and negligent leader. But we are going to find that he definitely never should have been captain in the first place, because that was a bad, bad call. But, like, the movie's about Captain Bligh being a total, like, just horrible leader who was abusive and cruel for the point of cruelty. I mean, he has a quote about, like, cruelty for a purpose isn't just cruelty, it's efficiency.
So in the movie, the captain is actually a terrible human being, and Trump is likening himself to that person.
And then the ending is the conclusion that he should never have been captain in the first place. Meanwhile, the brave, you know, mutineers make it to Tahiti. I mean, it doesn't end well for them in the end, but whatever. They make it there.
I was going to say.
It's okay. I think, like, in the end, like, only of the ones that make it back to England, I think most are not executed, but, like, at least three of them are. Plus, a bunch drown when their ship sank later on. Anyway, point being.
So that's the part that Trump is focusing on. That and the he's making a threat. He's making a threat. But, like, the mutineers need so much from the captain.
They don't need shit. That was the point, though. The mutineers needed shit from the captain. They had everything. They were generous enough to put enough food on the little rowboat they gave the captain that he could row his ass back home. Like, they didn't need shit from the captain. That's the point of the movie.
I'm going to have to check if this is on Netflix now, because
it's not that good of a movie.
Do you think he actually saw the movie?
No, I think he just, like, knows about a mutiny and has a captain in it, and he imagines a whole plot to it that's, like...
like, this honorable, noble captain and, like, these awful, you know, this awful crew.
And someone pointed out that, then, like, 10 years ago, Trump was interviewed about Citizen Kane. And he was asked, like, what his thoughts on it were. And his response was something like, I would have told him to find a different woman.
What?
Rosebud.
All right.
So the thing is, Trump's takes on movies are oddly insightful about who he is, but also just batshit. Mm-hmm.
It's because I'm guessing maybe he did see it, but it resonated with him in a completely different way. Yeah. Can you imagine watching that movie? Like, I haven't seen it now, but I'm going to see it. Watching that movie and completely, like, empathizing with the captain. Bly. Yeah, that's what he did.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that brings us to yesterday's briefing in the Rose Garden, where Trump comes out.
I thought we were there already. We've been in these briefings for
this
so
was
long.
An indoor one, and now we're in an outdoor one. It's the only, like, sense of time I have. Was it warm enough for how the briefings outside?
That's right.
And Trump announces that they're going to, you know, halt all funding to the World Health Organization in the middle of a pandemic. And this is why Trump says that they're going to do it.
The outbreak could have been contained at its source with very little death, and certainly very little death by comparison. This would have saved thousands of lives and avoided worldwide economic damage. Instead, the WHO willingly took China's assurances to face value, and they took it just at face value and defended the actions of the Chinese government, even praising China for its so-called transparency. I don't think so.
Now, this is obviously absurd, along with everything else he said, all his attacks on how the World Health Organization just accepted China's word and didn't react in time and didn't send up an alert soon enough and has refused to take responsibility for its failures or to even acknowledge those failures occurred, all of which literally describes what Trump did and does not quite literally describe what the WHO did, although there's fair criticisms to be made. Point being, Trump has literally tweeted out about how great it is and then how transparent China has been over this in January. So someone tried to ask Trump about this, and this is why these briefings are pointless, because Trump cannot answer a question.
Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. You were just criticizing the WHO for praising China as transparent, but you were saying many of the same things about China just a couple of months ago. So, I mean, how do you square your decision to...
Well, I did a trade deal with China, where China's supposed to be spending $250 billion in our country. We're going to be watching very much to see. Now, we got a little bit waylaid by the virus. But look, I'd love to have a good relationship with China. But if you look, and we made a phenomenal deal, China has paid, because of me, China has paid us tens of billions of dollars over the course of a very short period of time. Billions of it. Some of that money has been spent to farmers where they were targeted by China. We cannot let that happen. We can't let that happen. So we ended up signing a very good trade deal. Now I want to see if China lives up to it. I know President Xi. I think he will live up to it. If he doesn't live up to it, that will be okay, too, because we have very, very good alternatives.
Go ahead. Yeah, I made a trade deal with China is not an answer to that question, but it is sort of an answer in that it shows what Trump is thinking of and how he sees the world to some degree. And his response is like, well, of course I was praising China. I made a great, beautiful trade deal with them. So when I make great, beautiful trade deals, I got to praise the people involved because they got me praise.
Oh, so, well, thank you for making that connection, because I was struggling a bit about how that relates at all in any way to that question. The reason he wants to defund WHO, number one, he says the other thing he brought up a couple of times during the briefing, he said that they failed to send in their own folks into China to like see what's happening on the ground. I had read reports that China wasn't allowing doctors and scientists and global health experts to come in and look at anything. So that's not who, that was China.
And Trump, because like the failures that Trump was complaining about were all his own failures. Anyway, reporters kept trying to like, because this transparency, I mean, this conflict over like Trump literally saying that who's bad for praising China's transparency and Trump literally saying that China's been great and transparent. They kept trying. And here's how round two went.
And we are there to help. Yeah, please.
I have a question on the governor. Well, I have a question on the governor. So first, can I follow up on Jordan's
one question?
Can I follow up on Jordan's question? Do you want to walk back where you did praise China in January for being transparent about the
coronavirus? I'm always respectful of China. I'm respectful of other countries. Why wouldn't I be respectful of China? In the meantime, China's paid us nothing in your last administration, nothing in any previous administration. They paid us tens of billions of dollars because of what we've done. And the trade deal we have, they have to give us $250 billion in purchases. Let's see if they do that. And they're also paying us 25% of $250 billion in tariffs. So we're taking in billions of dollars for China from China. They never paid us 10 cents. That's a great thing.
Again, nonsensical, but it, like, well, not honest, that's the wrong word. It does show how Trump approaches the world. Trump is asked about why he praised China's transparency. And his response is that, like, well, they gave me what I wanted and they gave us lots of money. Why wouldn't I praise them? For him, the praise was not about what. To Trump, I don't think he considers it important because he was not praising China for being transparent because they're transparent. He was praising China for being transparent because China wanted him to do that and he won thanks from them. So for him, it's a transactional.
It was transactional. Matter. Right.
And that's why he keeps like saying, like, well, when who said it, they should be criticized for it. But when I said it, it was transactional. So it's
part of the deal.
Yeah, it's part of the deal. And even though this China trade deal has like never come on into being and still like it was phase one, like the smallest step in the right direction. And there's never going to be a phase two or three. Cause it's never going to happen now. Anyway, reporters made one final try, a third try to get an answer here. And quoted him for like literally saying that China's been transparent in responding to COVID.
You also praised China for being transparent.
I don't talk about China's transparency. Well, you know, if I'm so good to China, how come I was the only person, the only leader of a country that closed our borders tightly against China? And by the way, when I closed our border, that was long ahead of what anybody, you can ask anybody that was in the room, 21 people. I was the one person that wanted to do it. Deborah can tell you that better than anybody. I was the one person that wanted to do it. You know why? Because I don't believe everything I hear. And I closed. And if we didn't close our border early, very early, long before the kind of dates you're talking about, we would have had thousands and probably hundreds of thousands more deaths. Please.
I'm talking about how
please.
You
that's
you
enough. Thank you.
Yeah, again, not an answer related to reality and also full of lies because the U.S. was not the only one to restrict travel to China. And they were not the soonest to do so. And there were other countries that made bans even earlier and far more extensive than the United States ever did, even today. And one of those countries is Italy. So you can see how that worked out for them. And again, as with everything, asking Trump a question that forces him to give a factual answer is pointless because even when you've done the question right, even when you phrase it in a way that's designed to elicit information, he is never going to give it. He's either going to, like, say, testing, for instance. testing is obviously not where it needs to be. It is insufficient to this day. It remains, it's still at the plateau. It's a huge problem, and it's the biggest impediment to opening the country again that Trump so wants to do. But any attempt to ask Trump about this testing issue is going to get one of two responses. He's either going to deny there's any problem, or he's going to say that it's not his responsibility in the first place. And yesterday in the Rose Garden, it was the second kind of day.
Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Today, 600,000 cases, 25,000 deaths. I know you want to blame the WHO, but I've spoken to hundreds of people across the country in the last few weeks who say they still can't get tested and that they aren't social distancing because
so
they
the saw, governors, Excuse me. I know your question. You ready? The governors are supposed to do testing. It's up to the governors. Go ahead. Please.
Mr. President, if they are following your lead that they are not social distancing.
The governors are doing the testing. It's now not up, and it hasn't been up to the federal government. Go ahead.
Mr. President, I'm going to have a quick follow on the WHO.
I told them when they put this guy here, it's nothing but trouble. He's a showboat. If you keep talking, I'll leave, and you can have it out with the rest of these people. If you keep talking, I'm going to leave, and you can have it out with them.
It's a simple question.
Just a loudmouth. Go ahead.
Oh my God, that was so ridiculous. What?
It's, yeah, you know.
How is this real life?
I mean, incrementally, like, it's getting worse and worse the way he's treating reporters. I mean, what's interesting is, like, the room is thinning out, too. I think they're down, like, it looks like they're down to, like, 7 or 8 people there. I don't know why that's happening. Is it just that the White House is excluding some people or some?
It's distancing. They're trying to keep them far apart.
So just let, no, that I understand, but they're just letting, or just less outlets sending reporters, or they're just letting in less people?
They're making them sit farther and farther apart, which means less of them in there.
So I wonder how they decide who gets to get in. Anyway,
I think it's rotating. I think they have like a schedule and they change it out.
Oh, okay.
I mean, Fox always gets to be there, but others, like for instance, there's always like a foreign reporter. yeah, but there's always like a foreign correspondent who has the position daily, and it changes out between all the foreign news orgs.
Yeah. So, okay, so Trump now, Trump is basically saying, look, this is on the governors. I mean, like, you know, we're here, we provide the test. He's been asked over and over, okay, you're providing tests, but what about how to, you can't use a test without, like, you know, reagents or the swabs or whatever it is that they need. Like, they're just useless. He's saying that's on the governors. But just today, by the way, right before we got on air, news came out that the Senate Democrats have just unveiled a proposal to provide $30 billion in emergency funding for universal testing. Did you catch this news before we got on?
No.
Yeah. This is actually kind of fantastic if they're able to do this. And all I could think about as soon as I read it is, how will this administration circumvent the money? How are they going to get it? $30 billion. They want to set up within this proposal is that there would be a permanent fund at $4.5 billion a year. But this will be geared towards rollout, same-day testing to have, because they recognize that this kind of testing, the swift testing, is the only way. If you want to reopen the economy, that's how it's going to have to be done. You're going to have enough widespread testing that's very fast, gives you results accurately and quickly in order for people to be able to go back to work, back to school, back to wherever they want to go. So this was just unveiled today. Let's see where it goes.
The problem is Congress can write the laws, but...
Right.
Trump's got to be the one to enforce them, and he is not doing so great on that end. I mean, the whole idea that it's the state's responsibility is insane, because it's impossible for all 50 states to effectively and efficiently address this problem. Like, this is why federal government exists. This is why the founding fathers were like, you know what? Let's give federalism a try.
Well, speaking of states' rights, I gotta talk about this because it's trending right now on Twitter, and that is Operation Gridlock. Have you been following this?
No, I don't even know what that is.
Okay, well, the citizens will not be deterred from their right to die. There is this massive convoy that headed out this morning to Lansing, Michigan. They are protesting Governor Whitmer because she's extended the stay-at-home order through the end of April, which is only 2 weeks away, by the way. There are right now like hundreds of them, hundreds of cars. They cause massive gridlock. That's what it's called, Operation Gridlock. The group is outside right now protesting, not social distancing at all. Many of them, surprisingly, have MAGA hats, Confederate flags, and Trump banners. So that's what's happening right now in Michigan. And
are they wearing masks?
No, they aren't. And the efforts actually, I mean, even Michigan Republican, the House Republicans, I mean, they're tweeting about it in support of it. I mean, so it's kind of shocking. I mean, there are people who are fighting to die, basically. But they're going
to
take it back.
Republicans are literally on the record. They want people to die so they get more money and the economy is better.
Well, Trump is under a lot of pressure to open up. Movements like this are going to do it. But, you know, in response to this, we have a new council that's going to totally handle it, Susan. It is called Opening the Country Council. Mm. What a name, by the way.
And what a group.
So apparently late last week, he announced that there's going to be this new Opening the Country Council. And nobody exactly knew what the council is going to look like. Then I saw a graphic that had like six or seven people in it, including Jared Kushner, Ivanka, Wilbur Ross. I don't know, like a bunch of like whatever. Nobody.
Reliable Trump toadies.
Right.
And family.
Nobody who's actually a doctor or health expert.
Or an economist.
Right. Economist. But then like as this is, so he announces this graphic goes out. I don't have any idea how authentic that graphic was, but apparently not very, because yesterday, one of the things he did in his briefing yesterday is that he went on this very, very long rambling list of like all kinds of people, business leaders and just, well, I guess mostly business leaders. Also, and political leaders. He just went on labor leaders, who said that these are all going to be people who he's going to be calling on to advise him on how and when to reopen the economy. It was such a long list, apparently, that some of those people were like, we had no idea we were on this list. We have no idea what this is about. And they have been given no advance notice. And then after that long rambling display of names and stuff, just people randomly, the White House actually officially then put out a list of 17, it's called the, quote, Great American Economic Revival Industry Groups. They are forming 17 groups, and in those groups are names, and those names are the people that they are going to apparently call on, which is, I guess, better than that original graphic with Jared and Ivanka. But one person in that name that I was surprised to see was Jeff Bezos, the Amazon founder, who owns the Washington Post, and who Trump hates. And there's all kinds of people. There are, you know, casino owners and Carnival Cruise Line executives and just all kinds of random people thrown together in these 17 working groups, many of them who have no idea they're on it.
Yeah. Well, there was an article yesterday that came out about how Trump is trying to get massive industry buy-in for his reopening the economy plan so that when and if it fails, he can share the blame around.
I mean, he's going to share it no matter what.
But like, why is someone going to join this stupid committee when like the goal is to make sure that the whole all these CEOs said it was a good idea. You can't blame Trump for doing it.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know how that's going to look. One thing I did read, though, I read a report that on Monday, I don't know who Dr. Fauci interviewed with, but in some interview, he actually said that that the briefings were really exhausting because they would go on for 2 hours. And it wasn't just a matter of him just giving some update and some information and leaving, but he was forced to be there for two. That's a long time for a man of his age and a man who has a lot to do to be standing there.
It's a long time for any of us. It is.
It's
a time. And it's emotionally draining on all levels. Yeah.
Well, he wasn't around the next day, so let's see what happens. Maybe that's going to be his way of, maybe that was his way of just finally getting out of it.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. All right. So I got to talk about, I think this is a huge story. I am just, I just can't get over this. And that is that U.S. Postal Service, Postmaster General of the U.S. Postal Service has repeatedly asked the White House for help. I think they are funded through September, and the White House since the last time recorded, at least, gave one final no, we're not bailing you out.
They're trying to make the post office go under because probably because they've got like UPS and FedEx as major donors. It's insane. Like it's literally insane. It is so contrary to, you know, 250 years of American history.
I mean, it's in the Constitution. The existence of the Postal Service is like in the Constitution that it must exist.
It doesn't have to, but it can't exist.
But that it can exist. I thought it means that, well, you would think that's something the founding farmers, I'm so hungry. I'm fasting today. The founding fathers thought was incredibly important, and it is incredibly important. It's also important.
It probably never occurred to them that anyone would not want a post office.
Right. So apparently, okay, a couple of things I think it's important to note, and some of the information that I've learned in the last week is that the post office is actually not taxpayer funded, and I didn't know that. It has been self-funded all these years.
Since the 70s.
Oh, since the 70s it's been self-funded. Yeah. Is that what you're saying? Okay. So, but a few years ago is when suddenly there was a mandate that they have to prepay pensions or pre-fund pensions. And that's when they took a big hit. And that's what they have not been able to get out from under. And so if that was reversed, but I don't think this Congress would do it, then they might come out okay. But what is going to happen here? What do you think? How is this going to play out? I mean, we know that Trump, one of the reasons he hates, I mean, not one of the reasons, he hates Bezos. One of the things he's always said is that Amazon takes advantage of the Postal Service. And the Postal Service, for many of these delivery services, is, you know, they do the deliveries for a lot of them. The last couple of rural miles, you know, the post office is the one that carries a lot of the packages from Amazon and others to consumers. So now what? If they don't get funded, what's going to happen?
Well, Democrats can get their shit together and fix this because, one, we need vote by mail in November. And you can't do that. There's no post office.
I think that's what it's really about, too.
And, I mean, hopefully they'll do something. But if not, it's going to be a nightmare. And what probably
could
they not do? For you and me.
What could
for
they
you
do?
And me, it won't be so big a deal because we're not out of the way.
Right.
But for people who live in rural areas, this is going to be a severe hardship costing them to continue getting mail and packages.
Right. I mean, it is, okay, look, it's true that, you know, I get a lot of, like, my packages from Amazon or whatever UPS, but no, but general mail that we mail, I mean, like, even for, like, we do use a postal service. Getting mail to even...
Well, FedEx will care. I mean, the idea is that private companies will start doing the mail stuff,
is
too.
That what it's about? This is what I'm trying to figure out. Is it about privatizing, which we know...
Yeah. Republicans, it's about privatizing.
Okay. We do know that Trump was backing a Supreme Court justice in Wisconsin, many, I think like six different times he tweeted about this guy, and but he lost in that bid, and there's been a liberal judge, Jill Krofsky, has been now added to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And this matters why? This matters for a couple of reasons. It matters first because this is a court that has been or is going to or was, whatever, going to be making some decisions on whether voters can vote by mail, right?
Well, it'll decide everything in state law for Wisconsin. But it's also a bad sign for Republicans because any path for Trump victory in 2020 probably requires Wisconsin to be on board with it.
Right. Trump won Wisconsin by 3%. So, and we saw the pictures last week where all these, I mean, they were not allowed to vote by mail. They had to show up in person. And so all these, you know, Wisconsinites were lined up for hours and hours and hours, 6 feet apart, you know, to cast their votes, and thank God for them. So, yeah, I guess it's a bad sign for Trump, but also it goes back. What's interesting is that this, apparently that same court, they cast absentee votes to prevent, like, mail-in voting from happening in Wisconsin. And I don't know, so, I mean, like, this is going to have an impact on the national election, too, later this year, which I think has everything to do with the Postal Service, but that, you know. I think it would be very, very, I mean, like, how would it, if the Postal Service was not operating, how could we have a mail-in vote? We couldn't. It just couldn't happen, right?
I mean, they try and say it's through FedEx now. I mean, it'd probably hurt Trump supporters more than anyone. It'd hurt rural areas the most.
FedEx votes? I mean, really? FedEx, it just wouldn't be cost-effective for FedEx or any of these major companies to pick up, like, you know, to do... The Postal Service broke even. Like, they weren't profitable. They were, like, breaking even, you know? So it's not like... Mm-hmm. I can't see any private company wanting to break even taking on this huge...
Well, we'll just charge a lot more. They can get in the business. They're just going to charge a ton more than Post Office does.
Ugh. And all the people that are going to be laid off, like, almost 700,000, a force of almost 700,000 includes a lot of veterans and people of color. All right. Okay. So I guess that's it for us this week, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm so exhausted.
Until next week. Yeah.
I'm so tired, Susan. Let's make it all stop. All right. Okay. Well, thanks so much for filling us in. And thank you guys for tuning in. And we'll be back in 7 days.
See y'all then.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.